Welcome to another episode of It's a Long Road, the Ramble Series podcast. I'm your host, Ryan, and with me today is Robert. Now, bear with me, Robert. I haven't audibly heard your last name, and I'm not Italian, but I think I got it. Bruzio.
Perfect.
Oh, okay.
That's exactly right.
I should have read it by you before we went on the air, so to speak. But all right, great. So, Robert, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me today.
Well, it's really my pleasure, and we should thank, well, John Rivoli for his, what is with all you Italians? For him, actually, I have a question about the Italian thing in a second. We want to thank John for, I guess, connecting us, saying that I would like to have you on the show, and you might like to join me on the show, and I hope and I think that will be the case.
I'm glad you reached out.
Well, thank you.
And both. I guess it's a New York Italian thing.
Okay. Well, I got a question. There is a part in Rocky II where the commentator says, "I haven't seen so many Italians in one place." Remember that scene in Rocky II where?
Sure do.
Why did the other guy say, "Oh, I didn't say that. You said that." Why was that? Like, I guess I'm confused as to why that's a bad thing to call out that there's a lot of Italians supporting their Italian hero.
I don't know why it's a bad thing. I don't know if it was because he was just trying to be protective of himself, but there's this stigma about Italian people that if you offend Italian people in any way, they may come after you. And there's this mob thing. So I guess the guy was kind of nervous that he may be offending Italian people.
Okay.
I don't know why anybody would see it as an offense, but
we mentioned that in one of our Rocky episodes where that was said, and this is back in 79. So even back then when things weren't, let's be honest, not PC that they would even mention it in a film, like, okay, there's a lot of Italians. But yeah, maybe it was that mafia thing. Godfather was out just a couple years ago, or so maybe there's, don't mention Italians, to get the mafia after us. But, mafia and Italians, there's no such thing. Speaking of which, Tulsa King just came out of today's recording. Tulsa King was released worldwide on Paramount Plus. Have you had a chance to see it yet?
Is it airing now, or
yeah,
is it going to air tonight?
It's available right now. If you have Paramount Plus, it's available on your app.
Oh, wow. I thought we had to wait to tonight or something.
No, it's available.
I'm going to watch it for sure.
Okay.
I'll watch it this afternoon.
Well, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Yeah, I don't know how to introduce this, but you've done some screenwriting, and you've got a project coming up that I saw on IMDb that I want to talk about. But let's talk about your movie that you had written, and I'm going to gush a little bit because I just watched it this week. Thought it was a fantastic film called Bottom of the Ninth, and I had to get this guy's pronunciation of his last name. Joe Manganiello. Did I get that right?
Manganiello.
Oh, I can't.
He's got it right, though.
Okay.
That's, but you know what? That's what most people pronounce it, Manganiello.
Okay, yeah, that's my Canadian.
That is the proper.
Okay.
I think he'd be okay with that.
Okay.
Another Italian. There you go.
Joe was great. And of course, I knew Joe from True Blood. I watched him in True Blood, and he's married, of course, to his co-star and actress, Sofia Vergara. And I saw her in all the seasons of Modern Family, lovely woman. And they're married in real life. Can we just say, I get why they're married. It's unfair that these two people, the way their genetic makeup.
They're both ugly. That's why.
You're right. You took the word. Yeah. The ugliest people in Hollywood married each other. They seem like a sweet couple. And okay. So talk about when you wrote the story and how did you get it to the screen? That's an amazing journey for me. How did this happen?
Well, I started writing the screenplay back in 2004. It took me about a year to complete it because I was only able to work on it on weekends, working full time. But I made a commitment to write. And I was writing before that, but I had my own production company. So I needed to stay focused on the production company to pay the bills. It turned out to be this Rocky-esque type of a underdog movie. While I had my production company, I was doing a lot of work with Burt Young, who everybody knows played Paulie in the Rocky movies. We developed a real fond relationship professionally and personally as close friends. So I had asked him, just took a long shot. I think I had earned my points on this. If there was a way of getting the screenplay to John Avildsen, I hope most people know, directed the first Rocky, and won the Academy Award for it.
If they don't know, they can just hop off this podcast right now. You shouldn't be listening to her. No, just joking.
He gave me John's personal number.
Oh, wow.
And he said, here, call him. Tell him you're my friend. With my heart in my throat, I made that phone call, cold called him. And I said, look, I'm a friend of Burt Young's. And right away, I'm thinking to myself, John's going to say, okay, here's another friend of a friend who's got a screenplay. Fortunately, my screenplay was already getting traction. It got accepted to a market here in New York. Out of like 20,000 screenplays, they only selected 40. And I got notice from CAA in Hollywood. So I was able to use that as leverage, saying, look, it's not just a screenplay. I think maybe there's something here. Long story short, he says, all right, fine, send it over.
Sure.
2 days later, I get a phone call from John Avildsen. Robert, this is John Avildsen calling. I love it. I want to do it. Blew my mind. I was floored that here's the Academy Award winning director of Rocky.
Sure.
Responding to what I wrote. At that same time, because this is like around 2006 now, they were filming Rocky Balboa. And once again, my dear friend Bert invited me to the set of Rocky Balboa. And I went there with the intention of meeting one of the producers, thinking perhaps we could have this Rocky connection going on. And I went on the set, and that was my first times that I got to meet Sly. I was under the tent. He was sharing stories about the production. I got to see him become Rocky in front of the camera. It was an incredible experience. But I got to meet one of the producers by the name of Bill Chardoff, and respectfully, because they were working, I did not mention my screenplay. I waited until they wrapped. About a month later, I cold call Chardoff's office. Same thing, I'm a friend of Bert. We met on Rocky Balboa. Through a little bit of conversation, he said, okay, fine, send it over. I get a phone call from him. I really like this. So now we're making these Rocky connections together.
Sure.
And because of that pedigree, we were able to make offers to other actors, namely Joe Manganiello, who then eventually started dating Sofia Vergara. Joe became so passionate about this character. He felt that it related to him on a personal level because it's about a guy who had life in his hands as a young kid when he first starred in. He was one of the leading roles in Spider-Man and then took a big dive and kind of messed up his career and then came back, which is really what my story is about.
I always forget that he was in Spider-Man. He played the bully or something at the beginning.
He played Flash.
Flash. I think his name is Flash. It's just his, but it's not the comic character Flash. It's just that's the name of his kid.
Of the bully.
Yeah, in high school. This is the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. So this was 2000.
Yeah.
So yeah, Joe would have been, I did the math a little bit. I think he's just a little bit younger than me. So he would have been early 20s at the very least then, back then.
Right. And my main character, as you saw in the film, was a guy who had a contract with the New York Yankees. At 19 years old or 18 years old, and he winds up killing a kid in a street fight and threw his whole life away practically. And now when he comes out, it's about trying to bouncing back and find redemption and make peace with the big mistake that he made.
It's a great reveal in the film. I mean, because you don't reveal it right away in the film as to what he did. It's not a spoiler, but obviously something you went to. It's right away that he's in jail. His character is in jail right away. You see that. And then we get a couple flashbacks as to why, what happened and how it happened. And the amount of time he spent in prison, I don't know the judicial system in the States. I thought that was a long time.
He was sentenced to a shorter amount of time, but he got longer time for bad behavior. You notice he causes that
right at the
riot
beginning.
In the beginning.
Okay.
And it took him a while to learn.
Well, I do pay attention. I'm just a little bit, punchy sometimes. You know, I miss the small details.
No.
Okay. I got you.
It's a valid question.
Okay.
Question,
So it's interesting when I watch films. I'm sure we're all guilty of this and maybe even yourself, even though you are a screenwriter. I think sometimes we forget or movie watcher forgets just how important the screenplay. Without the screenplay, we have nothing. Steven Spielberg. And look, don't get me wrong. Some of these directors are, I mean, even John G. Avildsen, I love him, but without Sly's screenplay, we don't have Rocky. Without that story, without the story, we have nothing. The director has nothing. Everyone has nothing, unless the director wrote the film. So the point is, the screenwriter is the cornerstone. It's the linchpin to the whole production. Now, you get some bad actors and a bad director and a bad editor. Yeah, a great screenplay can be an absolute garbage, or vice versa. A semi-good screenplay can be saved with a good soundtrack and good acting. You know, it all works together, but without that story, we have nothing.
Yeah, it's harder to start off with a bad screenplay and make it good.
Sure.
It's much easier to start off with a good screenplay.
Yeah, I would think so.
If there's any writers out there, do the best that you can to make that screenplay as best as you can. Try not to compromise there. Because then once it becomes collaborative, where you do have the directors and the actors and producers and everybody comes on board, then they all start contributing theirs. And if not, everyone has got the same vision. Sometimes when you catch a Rocky, it is lightning in a bottle. You know, John many times shared with me, he always gave Sly the major credit for the incredible story that he wrote.
Of course.
But he also would say that without Bill Conti's music, John would have been where he was either.
Yeah, it's all simpatico. It has to be that lightning in a bottle sometimes to make those Rockies. And
it's like making a perfect chicken soup.
Sure. Yeah.
With all the right ingredients.
Yeah, and not too much of one thing or little of another, absolutely.
And John Avildsen did not wind up directing the film because John passed away right when we got the financing.
Oh, wow.
The director that jumped in right away is wonderful. Another L.A., New York director by the name of Raymond DeFelitta, who's most notably known for a movie that he made called City Island. Mm. So I just wanted to throw that
in. Of course, yeah.
Raymond did a fantastic job.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I was fortunate to work with John Avildsen for 9 years in developing the screenplay. That was a blessing.
I always like looking at the credits and trying to figure out, you know, who does what in the zoo. Of course, you're the screenwriter, but you're also an associate producer. What does an associate producer do? Yeah. Like, what kind of power do you wield as an associate producer?
The film takes place in the neighborhood that I grew up in the Bronx. I was very instrumental in securing a lot of those locations. But not only that, I was also very instrumental on putting a lot of the pieces together. I was the one that reached out to John Avildsen. I mentioned that to Bill Chartoff and started making those Rocky connections to try and market this as sort of a Rocky type of a movie. There's many producers. You have your on-set producers who are managing the money and managing the contracts and managing, making sure that everything is being on schedule. And then you have your executive producers who perhaps were instrumental on raising the money. So there's a whole bunch of different producers.
Okay.
And
I just find that
my participation is that.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Well, that's great. So you really, your fingers literally are all over this production and, of course, story, having the fact that you wrote it.
And I make a cameo.
Yes, I was going to say, yeah, I love your cameo. You did a great job in your cameo, by the way, and I felt bad for your character. Spoiler, you got fired from your job. I think Joe got it, so that's okay.
Only I can get to fire myself.
Yeah. Yeah, you did a great job. What's it like to see your, I mean, you did it for yourself by acting in it, but what's it like to see your dialogue and the things that you put to paper, like, really come to life on screen? What's that feeling like?
It's incredible. I mean, the writing process is grueling, very lonely. You're by yourself. It's you many times in a room alone, unless you go write in a coffee shop or something. But it's you and that computer. And then when you send it out to people, you're just waiting for other people to read it. But then when you actually see living human beings, especially of a certain talent, a certain caliber of talent, delivering your lines, it's just incredible. It's incredible gratification. You start to believe in yourself more because it's like, wow, these people who are at this professional level are reading my work. Yeah. But then even more so, what's so gratifying is, thankfully, we had a little run in the theaters with the movie when it first was released. And I got to sit with an audience and to see an audience reaction to your words. That's really what we do it for, you know, to see a bunch of strangers responding. That's key.
Does Joe have any baseball experience?
He's very athletic. He never really played baseball, but he played football. I believe he played basketball. He's 6'5".
Yeah, he's a monster.
Fantastic shape.
Yeah.
He's a monster. And, you know, he worked with a baseball coach for about 6 months to a year, I think.
Okay. It was just interesting because he, well, it's called acting, but you could see in the movie that he loved the game and was very passionate about the game. And I was just wondering if his background had anything to do with baseball. But it goes without saying, athleticism has certainly been in his blood since a young age, I would assume. Though he's tall, his physique is worked on. He works to look the way he does. He's a movie star for a reason. Yeah,
right. He's a great actor.
Yeah.
So
he was fantastic.
His passion comes across because he's such a good actor.
To see this big man be very soft spoken, looking for mercy at the world where, you know, looking for forgiveness from the world and being very patient with the world wasn't being as forgiving as he was hoping at the beginning. Great stuff. I don't want to spoil too much. It's a great journey, great viewing. I loved it. And before we move on to the next topic, what is next for you? I saw something on IMDb. I know IMDb can be updated by whoever sometimes. So what is next for you? I saw something that was recently announced that you're writing.
There's a couple of movies
that
working on. One in particular is about a guy who, and I'm working with the producer of Home Alone. His name is Scott Rosenfeld. He also produced Mystic Pizza, Teen Wolf. He produced most recently a film with John Leguizamo called Critical Thinking. And this is based on a guy named Skinny D'Amato who ran a most famous nightclub in Atlantic City back in the 40s. And it's about his relationship with Frank Sinatra and how these two guys, it's an untold story of what an influence this man had on Frank Sinatra, how Frank Sinatra also had an influence on him, and how their relationship is very endearing.
Okay, wow. That's awesome. Yeah. That's what it's like, based on a true story.
It is a true story.
Perfect.
It is based on a true story. And John Rivoli and I are working on something very, very exciting that I think the Rocky universe is going to love.
Okay, so you're the guy.
And I can't go further than
I
that
know.
Right now.
You're the guy. I had John on a previous Rambo episode as well, as you know, and he mentioned a project with his friend. So you're the friend. You're the guy. Yeah, and he said the exact same byline that you said, just tease the audience and shut up about it. Well, I know you can't tell me, but he teased me about that. So now it's all coming together.
We were with Sly last month.
Well, that
we
was
were
my
with
next.
Sly last month,
yeah. That's my next question. So, yeah. What you're working on regarding the, you're saying it's regarding Rocky the character. So it's within that universe at the very least.
Not the character, Rocky universe.
Universe.
That's all I can.
Okay, fair enough. No, that's fair. Yeah. Okay, that's fair. But you said you saw Sly regarding this. Is that what you just said?
We went to Atlantic City. John did a fabulous painting for Frank Stallone and for Sly. While Frank was performing in Atlantic City, you know, Sly is aware of this project.
Okay, fair enough.
All I can say.
I'm going to give you the mafia twist here. I'm going to like start pressuring you, put your head in a vise and get some information out of you.
Okay. I'm not a rat. I'm not going to rat.
I believe you. I actually believe you. I'm going to show on the YouTube video the picture that you took with Sly. And that was it during that time, this photo?
Yeah, that was in Atlantic City about a month ago.
And was that your first time to meet Sly?
No. I got to hang with Sly a little bit on Rocky Balboa.
What was that
like? In 2006, I went to Philly. You know, he was in incredible work mode, and it was so cool, and it was great to meet him. And Burt Young introduced me as his friend, and the first words he said to me, good to have friends. And he recalls that line later in The Expendables. I was like, ah, he had that line in mind.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I need better friends.
It's good to have friends. It is good to have friends. No, but to see his work ethic, The man was writing, directing, producing, starring. And I had this conversation with Bert. You know, you probably had like guys who were in their early 20s working on this film. And if anybody was tired, there's no way you can gripe because the main guy who's at that time in, I guess, early 60, almost 60 or whatever, is working harder than anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, at one point I saw him giving Bert direction, the cinematographer direction, move a heater that was almost about to burn somebody himself, and then go in front of the camera and become Rocky. It is just unbelievable. And incredible. For any filmmaker, it was a dream come true.
Yeah, I don't think Sly has ever been accused of being lazy. I don't think that's ever been.
Oh, no. And I witnessed it with my own eyes.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right. Well, before we continue with the show, I do have an email if you wouldn't mind indulging me. I don't get them very often, so I like to thank people when they do send me an email. You know, I'm just a Ham and Eggers podcast, so it's always nice when somebody reaches out and says, hey, I listened to you, and I have something to say about you. If you don't mind cracking wise with me on this email, we'll get through it. It says, hello, Ryan. This is from Carl. Another last name that I can't – what is with everyone's last names today? I couldn't even this is like Polish or something. I don't know. Olszewski. I'm sorry. Carl, I'm so sorry. I can pronounce Carl. So we'll do that. It goes, hi, my name is Carl. I just discovered your Rambo podcast today and I'm loving it. I'm a huge Stallone fan. I'm 47 years old. So I think we're around the same age. Well, I'm exactly 47 too, Carl. So we are the same age. He said that I grew up in the 80s watching Rocky and Rambo over and over, dressing up as them and playing the parts of the movies while listening to the soundtracks. I have the 3 Rambo books, and I used to have the 4 Rocky novels. Those are hard to find. I wish those would get reprinted, but they're...
I have those. I have every one of them.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I'm sure. Yeah. I wish I did.
Bought them in the 80s. I just never threw them out.
Well, that's just it. That's right. You'd have to buy them when they first got printed and not throw them away. He goes, I could go on and on about my love of Sly and these characters. Well, that's what I do on these podcasts. I'll do it for you, Carl. He goes on to say that I discovered your podcast today while working. I was looking to listen to a new podcast and searched Rambo just for fun, and yours came up, and I listened to the interview that you did with David Morrell, and I'm now on episode 2 as I write this. So thank you for that. David Morrell was a great guest and interview who's amazing, talking about the Rambo character and his novel writing. But he wanted to share a story. I thought our listeners might find this story interesting about his meeting with Sly. He goes, I wanted to share a story about me getting Sly's autograph in 2006, so same time you first met him. They had a viewing of Rocky Balboa about a month earlier, in while Sly was going to be there to raise money for a gym in Detroit. There was a red carpet on which Sly was getting fans and reporters, and I had the poster for the movie rolled up and a black marker. Sly was crossing back and forth on the red carpet, signing random fans' posters, etc. I was having trouble getting close enough to him to get his attention, and it was getting to the end of the red carpet. It was pretty much my last chance, and he's literally 3 feet in front of me with people between us. I'm calling his name, but it's so loud, and he's talking to someone with his back to me. So I take my rolled-up poster and begin hitting him in the shoulder with it. After a few hits of the poster, he politely turns while still talking, takes my poster and my marker, and signs his name and hands them back. I was ecstatic. Me and my buddy ran off to the theater where we got to see one of the first viewings of Rocky Balboa with Sly introducing the movie himself. Anyways, I'm a huge Sly fan, and I thought you'd appreciate the story. I look forward to more episodes, and I'll also check out your Rocky podcasts. All right. Thanks, Carl. That's funny.
Great email.
Like, dabbing up, hey, Sly, sign this thing, would you? It's like, okay, there you go. So, yeah, that's fantastic. I love that. So not quite a meeting with Sly, but certainly closer than I've ever been in contact with Sly. You got his poster signed. Hey, you got to do it. It's a million to one shot. You got to take that shot and tap him on the shoulder. Hey, sign this. I like that. So now, before we get into the Rambo film, what's your fandom of, well, of Sly and then of the Rambo series in general?
Well, of Sly, obviously Rocky. I was a kid in 1976 when it came out. I was about 8 years old. Funny enough, the first time I saw Rocky was in my neighborhood church school, and some kid in my neighborhood managed to get a print of the movie. This is way before VHS or home video. So he actually had film cans of the movie. And I'm not going to, you know, ask or divulge on how he may have gotten those, but he showed them in the church and he charged us all like a dollar or something. The impact that it had on me, as it did so many kids, stayed with me forever.
That's awesome.
And there was a lot of us that were in that theater, and we just went nuts from the beginning. Fanfare,
I
thought the whole movie, where we all came out, who tried to out push up each other, who was running, finding stairs somewhere to run up. That was my first impression where my fandom started.
Sure, yeah.
Then when Rocky II came out, I was a little bit older, and that feeling again, and now I had posters of Rocky and all over my room, and I started getting of the age where I can exercise, and it just continued to grow and grow more and more, as it has done for so many people. It just resonated with me. It instilled a drive in me. At that time when I was a kid, I was the youngest of all my cousins in that neighborhood. Maybe I was one of the younger kids. And if I got picked on or whatever, it was always Rocky to help me get motivated, to get back up and push back. If I wasn't doing well in school or whatever, I always went to Rocky. Something about Sly, about that getting knocked down and coming right back.
His Italian had nothing to do with it?
It had a lot to do.
If he was called the Canadian Bacon, Rocky Balboa, you'd be like, I don't know about that.
Well, being called the Italian Stallion really helped.
I'm sure
and I grew up in an Italian-American neighborhood.
Yeah, I know. You guys love that Italian Stallion. It's like Philly's hometown hero, but I haven't met an Italian on my show yet. That does not help.
I'm a huge New York Yankees fan because I was born and raised in the Bronx. I'm proud to say that the Yankees play in the Bronx.
There you go. Yeah.
So we're going to brag about what we have.
No, I love it. And sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your story there about Rocky II and your journey.
Well, you brought up a good point. Being an Italian-American and growing up in that neighborhood, he was the guy I look up to.
Yeah.
You know, he was the underdog. He's an underdog for everybody. But I guess just because having that Italian-American background, just perhaps, you know, but look, Rocky's beloved all over the world.
Yeah,
I can't
absolutely
say that was the only thing. Then leading, you know, to First Blood, when that came out, was it 81 or 82?
82, I believe, yeah.
82. I have such a fond memory of seeing that movie in the theater because I was maybe about 13 in 82. I went to see it with my mom and dad. Me watching my mom react to Sly getting abused. And she's saying, no, leave him alone. And my mom spoke Italian. You know, that was my first language.
Oh, wow.
So she's saying it in Italian, like, no, let's just stop. Like, leave him alone. And I'm watching her. And then when he starts getting his revenge on these guys, she's cheering for him. So it was so much fun. And I'm enamored with the character myself. But to see having this moment with my mom and my dad, it just made it that much more endearing for me.
It's very interesting that your mom had that reaction, because in not just your mom, but a lot of people's public eyes, again, the Italians and that part of America, they still kind of saw Stallone, and rightfully so. That was Rocky was his biggest, that was the Rocky character. Cause at this time, 82, right. He had a couple other movies, but we know that Rocky 1 and 2 were still his biggest films before in 1982's First Blood. And so seeing Sly, but in people's mind, they're seeing the Rambo actor getting beaten, pulverized. It kind of plays into your mom's reactions very, you know, is a witness of that, how they felt about Sly getting hurt and mistreated, I should say, even. There was, as you know, First Blood had the original ending of the Rambo character being committing suicide. He took Colonel Troutman's gun and pointed it in his chest and shot himself. They filmed it. It's on YouTube if you haven't seen it. Of the Rambo character dying by suicide, and test audiences were livid. You don't kill Stallone or the Rocky character. You don't kill the Rocky actor playing a Rambo actor. Their minds were like, you don't do this. I mean, had this film been made today, like 2022 eyes and movie going to see, like, people die all the time in film now. It's kind of like, it's not as shocking. So it'd be, because a tragic movie almost is the way movies are now, where, like, you don't have the happy ending, or the good guys don't always get away, I should say, sometimes. So it might have been filmed that way today. But back in 82, you didn't kill Sly.
You got to give Sly some credit here, too, because in his mind, this was a way of honoring the veterans. You know, the guys who, this is before people were really talking about PTSD.
Good point.
You know? Yes. If the guy is going to kill himself, this is a way where the guy is trying hard. He's fighting these inner demons and these inner, in his mind. So it's kind of saying that, you know, defeated, that these guys, he's trying to give these guys some encouragement who have really gone through this.
Right.
So I think that was way ahead of its time for him, or him and the studios, or, you know, wherever the decision makers were, to go with that call.
Absolutely.
You know, and you're right. And it was a more upper ending, higher note to leave on. And it was poignant.
Yeah.
It was a combination of both.
So, of course, now we're in season two of my show, and we're now on Rambo First Blood Part 2. Kind of a different feeling to this film. What's your overall feelings on on Part 2?
Fond memories of this. I'm a huge fan of it because, one, it's like quintessential 80s action movie.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm such a fan of the 80s.
I think it set the bar for it.
It set the bar for it. It really set the bar for it. Now, by the time this came out, I was able to go to movies myself.
There you go.
And I went 5 times in a row to see the movie.
Yeah.
Couldn't get enough. Could not get enough of it. Like you said, it set the bar. And I was at that age where, you know, working out, and his physique was just unbelievable. Right. And the things that he did were amazing. And you've never seen that kind of action before. Me knowing that I wanted to be somehow, even at that age, in the entertainment world, the reactions of the audiences just even more made me say, man, I want to be a part of that world, be part of the entertainment world, to give people that high that you walk out of in a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I was 10 when this came out. So my first Rambo film experience was Part 3. Ironically, my mom took me to that because I wasn't quite old enough to go on my own, because it's still rated R. It's so funny to think of these films being, you know, as we know, like, films are so much more crazy and violent. Cable TV is more violent than these movies. It's just funny. Like, I actually showed the first 3 Rambo films. I haven't shown Part 4, because Part 4 is brutal for violence. So the first 3 films my younger kids have seen, because they're pretty kind of tame compared to stuff you even watch, like, on Avengers. You know, it's not, maybe not gory violence, but the Avengers, quote unquote, action violence is still pretty intense. Yeah, it is. It's just less blood per se, but it's still, you know, got necks breaking. You've got, yeah, it's intense violence.
Buildings exploding.
Yeah. Thousands of people die. Innocent people. At least everyone Rambo kills aren't, you know, they're all guilty.
Right.
Yeah. This is it. We're going to break down what we're going to do there, Robert, is we're going to just watch a little bit of the scene sequence. You could talk about the writing or the filming or anything you want. It's a bit of an action packed type episode that we're doing. So what we'll do is you and I will watch a little bit of it, and then we'll talk about what we just saw. So the audio listeners, of course, on iTunes, will know what it is that we saw. I went back a little bit. The last episode had this scene, but I want you to see it. This is Troutman and, of course, Murdoch at the very end of the conversation, where Troutman says, you know, he never had a chance. And Murdoch gives the classic line, well, like you said, he went home. And I think it's just a great line, because the next scene, as you'll see why it's a great line to edit into the next scene.
Never had a chance, did he?
Like you said, Colonel, he went home.
I just love that you hear that musical cue, but of course the classic scene of, you know, Murdoch says he went home. And then you see the knife go in the sheath. You got the red bandana goes over top of his forehead. He puts on that little green pendant that's choking him. I think it's parts 2 and 3 he wears that thing. He's like wearing this like sexual chain choker for he could have just get like a, you know, something from his belt or something, make the strap.
Well, his clothes, right?
I know it was clothes, but that's what I mean. But he's like, just barely fits his thick neck. I just love that. I don't have time to make a bigger necklace. This is going to have to do for now. Yeah. He's pissed off. They killed his co. This is why he's mad now. The next sequence here, of course, is going to be a little bit of, we'll do it like kill by kill, but it's revenge time. Rambo is now completely unleashed. He has no military orders. He's beholden to nobody. He is his own government. He's his own army. Screw the rest of the politics. Screw my orders. I'm going to do what I want to do. And I'm done. He's like, I'm done. And now we get to see what Rambo does on chain.
And he really is home because now he's in his element. This is exactly his element.
Oh, yeah. He's buried Co. He's massaging the mud a little bit. He gets an idea. See, I think that's where he gets the idea about hiding the mud, when he put his hands in the mud.
That's a good observation. He's just brewing. All the anger, everything that's inside him in that moment is just...
Look at him.
That's
there.
It.
He's pissed.
Yeah. It's brewed. That's it. The coffee is out. You smell it full force. And now it's going to come at you at high octane.
Look, he looks great here. Yeah, I don't know what happened to Rambo's shirt. I can't wear it now, I guess. I guess I just got to go shirtless for the rest of the film. Oh, well. It's a good thing I worked out.
Well, did he have the shirt on? Isn't he...
Wasn't
he being tortured?
Yeah, that's where he lost the shirt. It was convenient. They took the shirt off for the torture scene. But he was wearing a shirt up until he got caught. Yeah,
until the torture, right?
Yeah, the mud pit and what have you. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he didn't have time to grab a new one. So,
hey, look, he worked out so much. You gotta
show. And this is his Rocky IV build as well. So this is peak Sly. The Rocky IV, Rambo II.
Yeah, he had put on more size than he did from First Blood.
Yeah, oh yeah. Right, funeral's over for Co. Now he's got to send more people to the morgue.
Love how it builds up.
All right, first guy, Russian soldier. He's in a tree trunk, comes out, breaks his neck. Down he goes. Silent kill.
What's great about this is that it's a recall from First Blood. You know, we saw him do this. So this kind of sequence. This is like a more amplified version of that.
In the first one, he didn't want to kill the American citizens, like, or the law enforcement. He still didn't. In the book, he does. Right. Yes, we talk about that. In the book, he kills everybody. But in the movie version, of the Rambo movie version, John Rambo did not kill the police officers. But he showed, that's what he says to the sheriff. I could have killed them. I could have killed them all. I could have killed you right now. That shows even how dangerous he is. I could have done all of you in, but I just maimed you all. I stopped you so you couldn't keep chasing me. But now he's beholden to nothing. He's going to be breaking necks.
Oh, yeah. No. These are real bad guys.
Yeah. Another broken neck choke. Broken neck. Yeah, he's become like almost like an alien predator hunter. He's just...
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. First Blood, they showed there was a little bit of time where he was able to build booby traps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was able to carve the wood and make the stuff. Here, it's not necessarily that he's building a lot of booby traps. He's just camouflaging and hiding, right? I don't think there's any booby traps in this in the sequence.
And so far, he's taken out just the Russians, which makes sense, too, because they don't know the jungle the way he does. They're actually, I don't think they're as familiar with the jungle and jungle warfare maybe as Rambo. Yeah. So far, he's taking out 3 Russian guys. He took out the last guy. He heard that was the bow and arrow taking him out from a cliff. The guy fell down. And now this one did alert the soldiers a little bit. The other two that were on the ground, they realized something was going on here. Another bow and arrow took the guy out.
It's a nice quiet way to do it too, right?
Oh yeah. I love this sequence here.
One of the best sequences in the movie. And they're all...
Oh, I thought this was... Okay, it's the other one I'm thinking. Okay, sorry, I don't want to spoil it. I thought it was the one coming up later. So that was another guy. So that's the three guys with the bow and arrow, all Russians so far. And I assume Rambo has retrieved the arrows from those victims. We don't see it happen, but I don't think he has an endless supply. But we have to assume he's grabbed them.
It's the movie.
It runs out of ammo.
I love how you see him just sneaking behind them.
What's coming up here, of course, our viewers of this movie know this part, but this reminds me, this is like a horror film kill. All that's happened to this guy really is that he's getting dragged into the hole where Rambo is. He's dragging him in, and he's going to dispose of him inside the hill. But the way he's being dragged in, you would think Rambo is also like biting his ankle. Like if I was being dragged in, I don't think the dragging in hurts that much. You're just kind of like, oh, what's going on? If I was the director, I might have filmed a little bit differently. I might have filmed it him trying to unhook himself from meat hook that's grabbed into his ankle. But the way he goes down the hole, it's almost like he's being garburated at the same time. But he's just being dragged into the hole. It's just funny.
I always wondered, too, like, and I guess, you know, we'll see it. It almost looks like he's choking. How come he's not screaming out? How come he's not?
Maybe something went around his neck that I don't remember. Okay, let's see.
I don't know.
Let's see. No, he's just being silently dragged in there. But it's just... And then he gets stabbed behind the rock.
But doesn't he sound like he's being choked or something? Yeah,
like, you could argue that he's just so terrified that he has a noose around his ankle being dragged into the hole. Because he's just being dragged. Like I said, he's got a trap around his ankle. Rambo's pulling him into the hole. And he comes up and he's in... And then he stabs him behind the rock through the throat, probably.
You know what happens, and especially in 1985, I remember vividly the first time I saw this in a full theater. Every kill was an applause. Every kill, everything. You're so caught up in the moment, just not analyzing it. You're just so caught up.
Welcome to the podcast, Robert. I will say we analyze the good, not the bad, but we analyze everything. And Rambo Part 2 is an incredibly fun film. But it is a 1985 action film, and my goodness, there's plot holes, and there's things that don't make sense, and that's what makes it fun to go through it. My enjoyment factor is 10 out of 10 through the whole film. But if we don't pick it apart, then nobody's going
to
listen to the show.
What are we going to talk about?
Yeah, what are we going to talk about, exactly. We just got in the chat here from one of our listeners right now, Louise. He says, LOL at 1985 crowds applauding for each kill. He said that was funny that they did that.
It was.
That's awesome. So far, it's the Russians that are getting killed. This, of course, is the classic scene. We know it's coming.
Oh, everybody went nuts here. Oh, right there. You know, as soon as you see the eyeball.
Yeah. So, of course, we're talking about the eyeball in the mud. Yeah.
In the theater, nobody expected that at all. I'm sure enough people watching it. Everybody went nuts. It wasn't just applauding at the kills. There was like a lot of laughing.
Giddy.
Giddy. Like, that's the right word. Like, everybody was giddy at everything that he was doing.
Because it was Rambo Unleashed. If you think about it, the first film, he didn't kill anybody except for the one guy through a gulp with the rock.
And it wasn't just the killing. You're not laughing because somebody's dying.
No.
It's at the way he's doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, unique. Oh my God. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I wanted to clarify that we weren't in masochists where we were looking just laughing because people were dying.
No.
We were laughing like at the uniqueness of what he was doing.
There's a little bit of me laughing that they're dying, but that's just me. I'm the guy that watches the horror films, and I always root for Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers. I'm that guy. I'm the guy that, you get those teenagers. But yeah, this is great, great stuff. The bad guys are dying, so we can feel good about the bad guys dying.
Right.
This is the fun part of breaking down this film. So I always love the idea of seeing the stuff that happened before the scene. So you got Rambo, he's going around looking around for a place. Oh, look at that mudslide pit there. So he puts himself against it, covers himself in mud, and he's like waiting there. He's like, I hope somebody passes me by because this is really good camouflage. I'd really love to get a kill on a guy. And he's got his eye closed just in case somebody sees his eyeball. So he's like, okay, I think he's in front of me. Open my eye. It's great aesthetics.
And how long would it take to put all that?
That's
mud
what
on
I mean.
You?
He took probably 10, 15 minutes. He's like hoping nobody's coming around. Cause imagine if a soldier came around mid get mud on moment. Like, come on. Give me 5 more minutes. I would have been covered in mud. Now I just got to kill you. I love that. But great sequence. But I always love what happened behind the scene that we didn't see happen. Yeah.
And I love what happens now.
Oh, here we go.
That was nice and clean. He was in the water.
Classic Rambo coming out of the water. Again, he's in the water. He just knows when to pop up. I love it. How does he know?
He's got no more mud on him.
There you go. You know, that's what it was. He went to the stream to clean the mud off, and it just so happened they were, yeah, he was actually just underwater cleaning. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, he's all clean now.
How does he know that they're standing there to get up?
Yeah. He's Rambo. That's how he knows.
So after seeing this movie, it came out in the summer. I know it was May, I guess, or June. So that summer, of course, anytime I was in a pool or whatever, I would try and shoot out of the water and maybe like throw something at somebody. And I could never see. I would come out of the water and I'm blinded.
Yeah,
how did he do it?
Stallone was just on Jimmy Fallon the other night, and my only complaint of that was it was a very short segment, but if you go on YouTube, apparently there's an extended cut of the interview that wasn't shown on TV, but it's on the Jimmy Fallon YouTube. He talked about the Rambo character, of course, and he talked about, I love how Sly, he takes the mick out of his own characters, right? And he was talking about how it was silly for one guy with no clothes on and a knife killing a whole army of people. So he beats you to the punch, you know, he knows what it is. He knows.
It was the 80s. It was fun.
Yeah. Louise also said that the mud camouflage scenes from this film and from Predator are an homage to Apocalypse Now.
Yes.
Was it Lutz? Lurtz? What's his name? So when he comes out of the mud and he's the bald head and everything. Yeah, good point.
Good point.
Now they're starting to panic. They're running around a little bit louder and trying to figure out who's killing our guys.
Yeah, everybody's freaking out now.
It's kind of funny. There's not one piece of mud on them, really, anywhere.
It was in the spring.
So we got the Rambo running through the village now, and I would assume he probably wants to get out of the village just as soon as he got there. He's just taking a shortcut because I don't think he wants any innocents to get caught in the crossfire, if I was to guess.
Yeah. I love that was incorporated in the movie.
Yeah. To show there's people around here, too.
That there's people around, yeah.
It's sunny, the rain has stopped, which is nice, which is probably typical weather for that area. Probably the rain, those rain comes and goes frequently.
He sees the open field, can draw them out of there.
I love this.
Poor
Sorry.
Chicken.
Yeah. So there's this poor chicken. He says, hey, Rambo, what's up? Rambo takes a look at him. Sorry, dude. Not only are you not going to feed a family for the day, I got to use you for diversion here. I know. And my co-host on the Rocky podcast, her name is Kate. She's a vegan. Katie, plug your ears and eyes in this sequence.
It's kind of convenient, though. Is the gasoline, is the chicken next to a gasoline tank?
It's like a video game. Everything you need is right there. You just pick it up. You know, put the chicken in your pocket, put the fuel in your pocket, and off he goes. I know he did. Because, again, we don't see him run off with the chicken and the fuel, but we know that he did. You know, we don't see him run off with it. It's just funny. It would look funny if he had the chicken under one arm. You can't catch a chicken there, Rambo. Yeah.
Right. I love how Sly would weave in and out through the cornfield.
Yeah, he's making the scent and the tracks all crazy and everything. And
yeah.
Just loving, of course, Jerry Goldsmith's soundtrack.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Now they're inside the corn maze or whatever this is. I think is it corn stalks or?
I don't know if it's corn or maybe bamboo. I don't know.
Bamboo, yeah.
I love this guy's reaction when he sees the flames coming at him. The guy who discovers the flame. He's like, get the hell out of here. Watch this.
Well, they see blood. Like, we got him. He's injured. They're confident they have him now. They see the blood trail. You gotta admit, they're not bad trackers in their own right.
Oh, no. This is a gas tank.
What I love, too, it shows, kind of a film flub, as they say. So they got the gas tank right there. It's open. And I love how it's next to the dead chicken. And it's a different bird, by the way. It's a white one.
The other one was red. That's right. I never noticed that. Never noticed that. Never. Wow.
Yeah, a little film flub, as they say. Yeah.
I love this dude's reaction.
It's like he sees a ghost.
That's great.
So I love how he's calmly putting the explosive arrowheads on, and you hear in the background people being cooked to death. He's nonplussed by it. You hear them scream in the background, but he's just casually putting the arrowhead on. He's on to the next thing.
Another memory that came to me. So I'm in high school. I'm discussing this movie with a teacher of mine who was a hunter, and he would always talk to us about hunting deer with a bow and arrow. And he's pointing out the technicality to me that if you put that kind of an arrowhead on, it changes the weight and you have to recalibrate the whole bow. And I mean, there's all these different technical things on it that he's explaining to me. And I'm like, but I like the movie. It was fun.
Yeah. Fair enough. That's probably true. Yeah. He's figured it out,
though. Of course. Of course.
There's two things I love about this. It's over the top. Absolutely. These arrowheads are causing warhead drop from an airplane type explosions, and which I love. Two, though, what I love is it's really kind of cool. There's no lead up to it. He just puts on the arrowhead and then boom, he's shooting. I like that. There's no warning. Like, we as an audience aren't even warned. Like, what's he shooting at? Right. He just starts blowing things up. So again, the kind of reminiscent of the end of First Blood where he starts blowing up the town. I'm just going to start blowing things up. And here he is very calmly. No emotion. I'm just going to start blowing stuff up. And he just...
It's great.
So, yeah, more people in the field are getting fired up. It's a great shot there, of course. Classic. Now, again, when these trucks got blown up by the arrows, I always loved this as a kid, man. This is the best part.
Yeah.
Impeccable aim. Got to give this guy credit for that. Impeccable aim.
Oh, he's Rambo.
That's true. I always love the sequence there of the oil or the gasoline going down the truck there off the bridge. Watch that.
Yeah, you know, I always assumed that the reason why the explosions were happening in the bamboo field there or whatever is because I thought it was poured with gasoline. And maybe that's what caused more of the
Oh, I think he dumped fire. It everywhere, yeah. That's why he's weaving through.
And then when he's hitting the cars, it's the fuel.
It's fuel, but I love the effect of the... It's a natural effect, I guess. They blew up these vehicles, I guess, for real, because you see this gasoline stream pouring over the bridge into the water below.
Crazy.
Right there. Look at that.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay, you know, they're firing blanks, I know, but that guy literally shot his weapon behind that guy's head. Like, if that was a... Did you see that? It would have taken that guy's head clean off, which happens, unfortunately, in war, but yeah, because they're just firing crazy right now. And it's the smoke that kills you. That's a good that they showed that. It's not actually not even the fire necessarily that will kill you. It's the smoke. That smoke will lay you out.
Oh, yeah. This is no CGI. He's a real stunt guy.
Yeah. It's fantastic. So we got Rambo. He's run to the waterfall area of the jungle here. You hear the waterfall in the background. Great shot here. Now, here's the guy. So this guy, as you know, he's the one that killed Ko.
Right.
He's the leader. And according to David Morrell, again, this is a reminder to our audience or anyone that's listening to this with you because they came on because you're here. This character is actually the same character, according to David Morrell, that cut up Rambo in the first time in the camp.
Ah.
Yeah. So right. Rambo really has a beef with this guy. He was Rambo's main torturer when he was in the camp before First Blood.
He's the guy who
cuts
him with the...
That's right. So it's the same character. It's a different actor, but it's the same character. And then it's the guy that killed Ko. So Rambo has a beef with this guy for real. So I forget the character's name, starts shooting at Rambo, runs out of ammo. Takes out his handgun, starts shooting, and Rambo slowly but surely takes out the bow and arrow. I love this.
Yep.
It's just classic.
Classic coolness.
Yeah. Buddy starts running. I love it. Rambo just waits for the perfect shot. I think he's letting him panic for a little bit.
Yeah, he's probably taking some pleasure in it. This guy really. Bam. Guy's body parts.
I just love it. Looks like his leg's still on the ground there. You see that?
Yeah.
That's a great effect. I mean, this is still a great effect. Like, it's great editing, of course, because you got the actor going, like you got hit with the arrow, and then it cuts to the explosion of meat. I just love that explosion of meat. It's just fantastic. In many ways, that's actually a merciful kill. He didn't feel a thing.
Yeah.
We all love that moment. It's
maybe that's why he had him panic for a little bit, let him suffer a little bit before he killed him.
Louise in our chat says, I never noticed the litany of continuity errors in this Rampage scene. It's just such fun, ridiculous few minutes that it's so damn entertaining. Yeah, it is. It really is.
Yeah, it is.
We just had a sequence after sequence of iconic Rambo moments. It just isn't stopping. And now Rambo's kind of like, oh, I got my comeuppance. I got this guy. He's feeling pretty good about himself as much as Rambo can. And he's about to get into more hot water really quickly. That kill felt good. He's soaking that one in. But now he's got to go on the run again. The helicopter comes over the cliff. And it's that big Russian guy. Did you hear the story that John Rivoli shared regarding this actor?
No.
Okay, so go check out my episode with John on the previous, like one or two before yours here. If you want, just go to the end. He shares an incredible story about this actor that I'll let you hear for yourself from John's lips to your ears. Yeah, it's a great, fun story. And again, anyone that's watching this, I think it's episode, it's six or seven. Just go look for John Rivoli's appearance on season two. And he shares a great story of this actor about him, Sly, and this actor had a meet and greet.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a fun story. So, of course, Rambo chucks his bow and arrow and starts running from this bomb that's about to drop on him. He knows he has to get to some sort of coverage. This is like when you blow up your house because of a spider.
Oh.
Of course, we all know the sequence. Rambo jumps off the cliff into the water from the explosion. And the Russians from the helicopter shoot up the water in hopes of killing him still. Yeah, that's what you gotta do with this guy, right? Like, it's Rambo. Take.
Great.
I love how far he jumps. There's just not, it's humanly impossible.
It's like he flew up there.
You see him grab the guy from the helicopter is hovering, yes, 5 feet above water. And he jumps high enough that he lands on the helicopter landing as well. It's just funny. So
it's like with one arm, he pulled one guy down, and with the other arm, he yanked himself all the way up.
That must have been the physics. You're right. So what we're going to do is we're going to end it there.
Oh, that was fun. That was so much fun to watch.
My understanding of that stunt, so correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding was that Sly did that stunt, that he jumped into the water. That's him. And he felt the heat on his feet or something. Like, he legit, it was kind of close for comfort. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, you are right.
Oh.
When I was a kid, when the movie was first, before it was released, I had heard that Sly did his own stunt where he almost burned his back.
Okay, back.
You know, where he did this own thing. And, you know, the fire was so close to it. It was kind of like almost like a built up thing. And I remember talking with my friends, you know, saying, oh, this one here is going to have so much more action than First Blood. That's what they're saying. And if you recall in this one, the beginning of the movie starts off a little bit slower. I mean, up until he doesn't see the POW, the live POW guy, it's really not that fast. So my buddy, who I kept bragging about the movie, none of us had seen it yet. I'm saying, yeah, this is going to be action packed. And he's nudging me going, Yeah, right, a lot of action. And I told him, I says, no, there's a scene where Sly really actually almost got burnt. So remember when he's on the boat with those guys and they're shooting at him and he kills everybody? And then at the last second, he like ejects out of the water and falls in and there's like the boat explodes.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's it. That's the scene. That's the scene where he almost gets burnt. I didn't know. So I'm thinking, oh, that was, and we were just blown. We're like, wow, this is just amazing. Then this scene happens. I was like, oh my God, when you see that big flame literally on his back.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then I learned that, no, this is the one that he was talking about. So that first one there, which I learned later was a stuntman.
We weren't sure. We speculated that it was a stuntman because this one's a closer shot and you could tell it's Sly, his physique, whereas the other one's like, I'm not sure, which Sly would want you to know it's him, as he should. If he's going to put his life on the line, so to speak, or injury prone on the line, he wants you to see that it's him. Why not?
Well, he did talk about it in 1985 when he was doing promo or whatever, but I hadn't seen the scene. Nobody had seen anything.
Right. Yeah.
So when I saw that moment in the movie, I was so blown away by that. I was like, that's gotta be it.
Yeah.
Then I see this, and nobody's ever seen a stunt done like that we may be desensitized now because we see things like this all the time.
Well, yeah, you're right. But so much stuff now is green or green screen with the wires cut out. And
right.
Now,
right.
These are all free-falling stunts, man. I love these early 80s stunts. And there's no CGI, no green screen. It's a real fire, no CGI fire. Everything's just like people are really falling and jumping and... It's a different aesthetic. So they're not as elaborate, maybe as an adventure film type looking stunt, but it's more aesthetically real, and so it feels better.
It's insane. I had a small taste of this myself. I did a short film once where I played a guy who was in the Korean War, and I actually co-starred with Burt Young in it. We had a stunt coordinator, and there was an explosion that was happening right behind me. We had a pyro guy, and the flame is supposed to go up, and I'm supposed to jump, you know, right before the flame takes off, and it just misses me. So we do the first one. My stunt guy said, jump when I say three. And on the first take, he went one, two, and I must have, because I was so nervous, jumped almost right before he said three. So it didn't look that impactful. We do another take. He goes one, two. He nudges the guy. The guy shoots off the thing. Then he says three. And the flame was literally on my back. He told the pyro guy, set it off on two. I'm going to tell him to jump on three.
There you go.
And the flame up. And then when I saw it, like you see the thing, and it made me think, I was like, hey, Sly did it, and I did it too. Look at that.
There you go. That's awesome. It reminds me of the Lethal Weapon. Like, is it on three? Do we jump on? Or what is it?
Yeah.
It might be the Lethal Weapon. Last question from Louis, and we'll let you go there, Robert. I know you're busy, and I appreciate you coming on. He says, what's Sly's worst onset injury? It's either the Rocky IV punch from Dolph, or I would almost argue that that was close, but he broke his neck from Steve Austin, didn't he?
I was just going to say those were the two. It was either the punch or in the Expendables.
Yeah,
where he broke his, and he's older. I guess he was almost in his 60s.
Yeah, I think he was 62 or 3 then. Yeah, something like that.
So you don't recover as fast.
No,
either,
no.
As he did when he did Rocky IV. Not even 40 yet.
His biggest onset injury in my book was his singing in Rhinestone. I think that one caused the biggest injury to his ego. Anyways, well, we love you, Sly. All right. Well, Robert, it's been an absolute pleasure coming on. Coming on the show. I hope you had a good time.
Had a great time. Thank you. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me. If anybody does have a chance, check out Bottom of the Ninth. It's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
It's on Apple. It's on demand. It's blah, blah, blah. Whatever. Yeah. Look it up.
Absolutely. Support Robert. Is it considered like an independent type? It's a smaller film in that sense, but I don't know what the rules of independent filmmaking is, to be honest with you.
It is independent. Fortunately, we had a distribution deal with Paramount. They took care of a lot of some of that distribution stuff, including it being on DVD. Yeah.
Support these films is what I'm saying, folks. You know, we got enough of whatever. These are the good story-driven films and great passion projects, and I'm glad I watched it, and I'm grateful that Robert, I got to watch it, I got to meet you, got to tell you to you in person that you did a great job, and I'm looking forward to your next project. Absolutely. And I hope you'll come on again when that project comes on. Maybe you'll come on again and plug that and join me for whatever film
anytime.
I'm on. Okay.
My pleasure. Great job. This is a great, great, great podcast.
All right, Robert. Well, thank you so much again. And unfortunately, though, the episode is over.
Nothing is over. Nothing. You just don't turn it off.